Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Noah Lee, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have a new guest host today, Noah Lee, and he will tell us all about where he is from and what he does and that kind of stuff. But first, the important stuff, how to get a hold of us. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and find us and all of our other podcasts and articles and stories and you know, naked pictures of me. To your heart's content, you can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network and all of our little podcasts and options show up. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and get us and like us and all that good stuff. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com and you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Also, if you want to reach me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr. That is where you can find all my ramblings and permutations and mutations and everything else. But before we move on and go into movies, let's talk to Noah. And Noah, tell us basically what you do, who you are, where you come from, your social security number, mother's maiden name, all that good stuff, so we can follow you wherever you go.
I'm a writer out of Austin, Texas. Also work in the IT industry. You can find me at Film Threat. I'm a contributing writer there, kind of covering the film festival circuit for them. I'm at www.filmthreat.com. I also cover horror movies for Horrors Not Dead, also at horrorsnotdead.com. And you can find me at Twitter at noahphex.com. That's N-O-A-H-P-H-E-X. That's it.
That's it. And what's funny, we were talking about this off the air. I used to write for Film Threat as well. We never crossed paths, and we actually never crossed timelines here. This isn't Star Trek here. I stopped writing for them probably about 8 years ago, and you started after that. But I actually wrote for it way back when it was run by Chris Gore, who now is past the reign. Who runs it now?
Mark Bill is now in charge. Yeah. Okay. He's took it over actually during Sundance. Many years ago, Chris sold it to him, and he's been keeping the torch burning for them.
Yeah. You can actually go and find my old stuff. I actually checked it out. If you search, it was funny, is if you search my name, there's a couple articles where I'm mentioned in it, but my reviews, you actually have to find my page. You have to search for stuff I reviewed. So, I'm there too, I guess. Not to steal your thunder.
That's okay. Look for your 50 First Dates review.
Exactly, 50 First Dates. I think the last review I actually wrote for them or published on there was Wicker Park. Did you ever see Wicker Park?
I did, yeah, but it's been a while.
So bad. Josh Hartnett is so terrible. But you're a big horror movie fan. I should have you on. We should get you on in the month of October. That's of course a big horror movie. Did you do the whole 31 days of horror where you watch a horror movie every day?
No, because I watch so many horror movies, it'd almost be redundant at that point.
throughout the year, you're still always watching horror movies every. How often do you watch a horror movie?
Several times a week. In fact, we watch horror movies every Wednesday night with a friends of mine. A friend who moved to Austin from DC has been doing horror movie night for over 9 years now. And he programs a year's worth of horror movies every Wednesday, same time, every week. And we go over and watch those. And then just even outside of that, I also watch horror movies constantly on the weekends. So
now is this horror movie night? Is it always good? Is it always bad? Or do you just get a variety?
Oh, it's mostly bad, honestly.
That's good stuff though, man. Bad horror movies are awesome.
Yeah. I mean, well, the nice thing is that you kind of learn what is good by watching so many bad movies. And you find a lot of, you know, diamonds in the rough that way. Mm-hmm. So tonight we actually watched a really good one. So we saw Bad Dreams, which is a remake of a really bad remake of Dream Warriors from the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
And you said it has Jennifer Rubin in it, who was really attractive then. She's gotten a little... Well, she's old. I mean, that happens. People age.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fault somebody for getting old.
No. And she's actually very attractive in that one. And then it also stars Richard Lynch, who unfortunately just passed away.
Yeah.
So, and he's kind of a really good character actor who was in a lot of movies that some people might consider bad, but I don't.
That's okay. What's your favorite horror movie of all time?
It's actually a toss-up for me. It's somewhere between Jaws and The Thing. So
okay.
I vary back and forth, but I've seen Jaws innumerable amount of times. Every time it's on TV, I watch it. And The Thing, I think, is almost a near perfect movie.
The Thing is awesome. What do you think of the sequel? I'm curious, or the prequel that they came out with last year. Were you a hater of that one?
I don't hate it. I just think it's a disappointment, and it's kind of a missed opportunity. Mm. I think the acting in it's good. I think some of the monsters are still sort of scary, but it just doesn't deliver the same impact that the original had. And it was kind of destined to fail in that matter, because nothing is ever going to be the Thing.
There's no way. There was no way to top it. I mean, it's not even that the original, the 82 version is so fantastic. I didn't hate it though. It's one that I kind of got on video, and I could see myself watching it again just because its pedigree is so fantastic, and it didn't come. I don't think it soiled the 82 version of the Thing's reputation. But I think if there were just like two or three little things that I would have changed,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I would have done less of the spaceship. I would have done, spoiler, they're going to spaceship. I would have done less CGI and more blending of CGI and practicals. And then I wouldn't have made the Thing so jumpy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like those are if they just changed those, I think it would have been a really fantastic movie, but overall I thought it was solid.
It's solid if you kind of take the original, I say original even though obviously it's a remake, but if you take, the 82 one out of your mind, it's actually kind of a solid horror movie for what it was. Yeah. But if you're going to compare the two, somewhat of a disappointment.
Yeah, and Jaws, you're going to probably get the Blu-ray when it comes out. It comes out, what, August 14th?
I can't wait. Super excited. Plus, it has the documentary, The Shark is Still Working.
The Shark's Working.
Yeah. Which is a really good documentary. I was lucky enough to see it, and I highly recommend it if you can see it. It has so many incredible details about the movie.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's move on to the first review, which we only have about a minute for, but we'll blow through it really quick, and we'll maybe spill over into the next segment. The first one is Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. In his younger days, Abraham Lincoln was quite a player, and he killed vampires.
47 years ago.
There is darkness everywhere, Mr. Lincoln.
Our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Vampires have been in the New World for centuries.
It's time vampires had a nation of our own.
First of all, I just have to just express a concern that there's going to be no Twilight vampires killed in this movie.
That's kind of an unfortunate thing. But you get a badass Abraham Lincoln. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, I haven't seen it. They didn't screen it in Columbus, and you didn't get a chance to see it, even though you're in Austin. There was this famous screening going on in Austin. But I feel the same way I did about Cowboys and Aliens. If people are going to watch this movie and be like, this is stupid, it's called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Cowboys and Aliens was called Cowboys and Aliens.
You pretty much know what to expect when you go into this movie, I think. It's not offering anything special. You got Abraham Lincoln fighting vampires. If you're into that sort of thing, I think it's probably going to deliver.
I'm kind of looking forward to it. I mean, people were just trouncing on it. But anyways, it has to get a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. But we got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk maybe a little bit more about this. Good. Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are here with Noah Lee, and we're going to be talking. Let's finish up Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. The point being, it's a completely ridiculous story about Abraham Lincoln hunting vampires. If you're not on board with the title, you're not going to be on board with the movie. And I think that's, like I said, Cowboys and Aliens was the same thing. People are like, oh, stupid. It's just a bunch of cowboys and aliens. And you're like, it was named Cowboys and Aliens. What do you expect? I mean, it's like not like Project X, which comes out on Blu-ray DVD this year or this week. It's not like you say, oh, it's Project X. It sounded like a scientific experiment or a remake of that Matthew Broderick movie. And it was just a bunch of people burning a house down, basically. Okay. It doesn't quite fit the title. But yeah, I, uh, I'm kind of. I also like. I don't know how to say his name. Timur Brkarakarakadu.
That's as close as I would get.
Brkarakarakadu. I think that's exactly. That's how. If I ever meet him, that's how I'm gonna. I'm just gonna stick with it. He'll punch me in the. He'll just punch me in the groin.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I like his stuff. Mm-hmm. I liked Wanted. I liked Night Watch. I wasn't wild about Day Watch, but I think the guy's got talent. So I kind of want to see what it does with it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I am too. I think he has a good grasp of kind of wildly crazy fantasy and mm-hmm. action sequences. Like, they're always been kind of fun and exciting. So if he can deliver in this movie, I think it's going to be something worth watching.
Yeah, and he it's only like an hour and 45 minutes. I saw somebody make a comment that it was like 2.5 hours, and I'm like, what? No, and it's not. It's an hour 45, which is, this is not a Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah.
So, actually, speaking of Judd Apatow, we're going to go to the next movie. I'm going to flip-flop these that are in the title, because I had that great lead-in that I used and took for myself, the segue. The next one is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Steve Carell plays a man who is trying to help his neighbor meet with her family before an asteroid strikes the Earth.
The 70-mile-wide asteroid known as Matilda is set to collide with Earth in exactly 3 weeks' time, and we'll be bringing you our countdown to the end of days, along with all your classic rock favorites.
Hello. You okay?
No! I'm never gonna see my family again!
Would you like to come in?
I won't steal anything if you don't kill me.
Agreed.
Who's the girl? She the one that got away?
Well, they all got away, but she was the first, yeah.
Let's go find her.
Now, this one is a little lighter, oddly enough, because it's about the end of the world. And Keira Knightley, of course, plays the woman that he runs into. I know you haven't had a chance to see it. What are your anticipative thoughts on this?
I kind of think this is going to be a charming, maybe somewhat entertaining movie that you won't think about in a week. I doubt it's going to have a lot of legs to it. I'd like to see it. I haven't seen it yet. I think Steve Carell is a kind of a charismatic, you know, actor. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's kind of going out of his wheelhouse here with anything. And Keira Knightley, you know, she's her.
Yeah.
So, but I like the idea.
She's adorable.
Yeah, she can be adorable sometimes.
She's got a British accent.
But, and I like the idea of, you know, people coming together at the end of the world in kind of a positive manner. We're not going to, you know, this is not Mad Max here. So,
yeah.
I think it's something probably worth watching, but I don't think it's going to be something that's going to stick with us or is going to make any kind of award list at the end of the year.
Yeah, it is a very charming movie. I'll put that out there. I mean, there's a couple things I liked about it. I mean, I liked the fact that I think, like you said, it's an unusual apocalypse movie. Mm-hmm. It goes places that you don't expect an apocalypse movie to go, because most apocalypse movies, it's like you get the people yelling at each other and the people fighting, and then you got the anarchy. This is like the sweetest, most, you know, just manicured, very nice, calm, completely just under control end of the world you'll ever see in your life. And there's like one scene, and you see it in the trailer, there's one scene where there's a little bit of unrest, but they get away from that. And then they're just, I mean, it's like you don't see like houses burned down or anything like that. You don't see anarchy. You see it just, everyone's, I think everybody is like on Quaaludes in this movie, because they're just like, the end of the world, man.
Like, it's okay. I'm ready for it.
Yeah. And I can, I mean, like, everybody has food. The electricity still works. You know what I mean? So it's, and I mean, I get that that's not what the movie's about. The movie's not about what would really happen in the infrastructure and the destruction. And, you know, I mean, if you watch the movie, like, Contagion.
Yes.
That movie, it's like the Contagion, it's like a week or a month. It's not very, it doesn't take place over a very long period of time. And the entire world society just crumbles.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like shooting people in the house and looting the suburbs. You don't get any of this. There's plenty of wine for everybody. But that's what the movie's, not about the apocalypse. It's about these characters, and it just puts them in a unique position. And as unrealistic as it is, it's still very charming. My only big problem is Steve Carell. You said this. He's not out of his wheelhouse at all. And I think he's a fantastic actor who I don't think has ever really been given much of a shot outside of what he does. Like, the closest is maybe Little Miss Sunshine, where he was a little bit different than what he normally plays. You know, but I'd love to see him play I'd love to see him play a James Bond villain.
I'd like to see him do a villain, period. I mean,
yeah.
He's never quite done one. He's always very much a protagonist of some sort, so that would be interesting.
Well, and this one also, it like literally opens almost exactly the same way as Crazy Stupid Love.
Oh.
He's in a car breaking up with his wife. I mean, that's like literally how both Crazy Stupid Love and this one opens. It's the exact same character. So while he does a great job playing that character, it is a little bit tired to just see, oh, there's Steve Carell again.
Yeah.
Doing it. I mean, as opposed to somebody like when you got like even Johnny Depp, I'll throw out Johnny Depp because or Gary Oldman.
Mm-hmm.
They're always playing different types of characters.
Yeah.
And Steve Carell isn't, and I'd love to see him do it because I think he's got the chops to do it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Yeah.
So I'm going to say it kind of rocks as a movie. But now as we move on to the next one, which is Brave, in medieval Scotland, that was the best Scottish accent I could do. Just to say Scotland.
It was not good.
It was terrible. It is, I mean, it's embarrassing. And I'm terrible at accents, and that's even bad for me. So I won't do anything more.
Okay.
Haggis. That's my Scottish.
Freedom.
That's right. I'm just offending every Scottish person listening to this. And we were like in the top 200 in like Ireland. Well, Ireland, they're like, screw the Scottish.
You just offended them even more.
That's right. They're like, oh, ah, they're popular in Ireland.
Oh, God.
Get under me, kilt. Anyways, in medieval Scotland, I'm so sorry, Scottish people. In medieval Scotland, a young princess tries to change the tradition of her family by seeking help from a witch.
In accordance with our laws, the firstborn of each of the great leaders must prove their worth. Merida, stop!
A lady enjoys elegant pursuits.
I want my freedom.
But are you willing to pay the price your freedom will cost?
Careful what you wish for, my mother would say.
What's the worst that could happen?
Are you interested in seeing this? Are you a big fan of Pixar?
I'm a huge Pixar fan. I mean, who isn't? Although I have to...
people who suck.
People who completely suck. I do have a caveat. I hate Cars. I didn't see Cars 2. So they do have a blemish on their track record for me.
That's not Cars, I'll tell you that.
So as long as it's not Cars, then I'm okay.
As long as Larry the Cable Guy doesn't show up.
You know, the sad thing is in Cars, I actually like Larry the Cable Guy. So that goes to say what I think of that movie. Awful. But yeah, I'm very excited for this movie. A Pixar movie is always a must-see.
Mm-hmm. Here's a couple things that's interesting. It's actually getting some middling reviews. And I think some people are being overly harsh to it. And I don't know, because I think, I'm like, well, what do you expect? I mean, they did 10 in a row. And with the exception of Cars getting sort of... but you know what's funny with Cars? A lot of people will point to Cars and say that's the bad one. And it's my least favorite of all the Pixar movies, the first Cars. But I know people who freaking love Cars,
mm-hmm.
who like that is their favorite Pixar movie. And it's odd. It's just, it's not to the typical critic crowd. It's not their favorite. But I mean, you talk to average people, there's a lot of people who love, my kids freaking love that, mm-hmm. that one movie. So I don't know. It's, but they had 10 in a row, were fantastic. And a lot of people point to Cars 2. I thought Cars 2 was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're like, oh, Monster University and Brave, and I've heard people say this is like the worst ever, and I'm like, well, it's less 100% Pixar, and it's kind of like Pixar doing Disney, and it sounds odd to say that, but it's very much a Disney story, you know, it's a Disney princess.
That makes sense though. Yeah. Pixar's been working closer with.
Hold that thought. We got to go to a break, and then when we get back, we'll talk more about this.
Okay.
22 miles of hard road,
33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground. Crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment where Noah can swear now, if you'd like to. Do you want to throw down a swear word? Just, I always like to give the guest an opportunity to say something raunchy.
Okay, I'll go with my favorite one. Fuck.
Oh, that's so... That's easy. That's like saying Curly's your favorite stooge.
Curly is my favorite stooge. How'd you
Curly's
know?
Curly's your... Oh! You know who my favorite stooge is?
Who?
Larry.
That doesn't surprise me.
Larry is... You know why, Larry? Because Larry is like... He is the pillar. He is the rock. He's the glue that holds everything together. Because you have Mo out there going crazy, Curly or Shemp or Joe or Curly Joe, anybody else, they keep coming in and out. Larry is there, and it wasn't until Larry got sick that the Three Stooges completely fell apart.
I guess I can't disagree with that, but I think it's kind of been apparent that Curly would be my favorite. I like the extreme. What can I say?
Well, yeah, I was expecting something more creative, like Queef.
Queef? That's not even dirty.
You can't say that on the radio.
That's true.
We went through that a couple weeks ago. I had Nick Karam on, and he was talking about how he was talking queefing. There's tons of queefing coming away from him. But anyway, speaking of queefing,
Brave.
You had something to say about Disney princesses and Brave.
Thanks for that, Leaded. Helpful, very helpful. That's not exactly the best one. I think the impression I have of Brave is and Pixar in general is that they've been working much more closely with Disney. So I'm not surprised to hear that this is more of a Disney princess film than it is a Pixar film. It doesn't even feel like it by the trailers that it's a Pixar film. It doesn't seem to have kind of the deep emotion or the kind of like wildly comedic moments to it.
It does feel a lot like... I had somebody ask if it was like Tangled, and I'm like, kind of. I mean, it feels a little bit more like it's bridging the gap between Disney animation, which has done some great stuff. I mean, they did... I like Meet the Robinsons, and I like Bolt, and I liked... I like Tangled. I thought that was good, and mm-hmm. the 2D stuff is fantastic. Princess and the Frog was adorable.
Yeah.
And John Lasseter's in charge of that, so there's going to be some crossover.
Right. It's not a musical though, right? Like a lot of the Disney princess stuff. Okay.
No. It's well, and there's a lot of things going on with Brave. First of all, I think it's interesting. I'm just going to preface this by saying it is the first Pixar movie not only to have a main female protagonist. I mean, you've had female characters in Pixar. Probably the most prominent female character would have been Mrs. Incredible.
Okay.
In The Incredibles, and then you have like Sally from Cars, and then it goes down, and there's like Barbie. And Bo Peep and Mrs. Wow. Potato Head, you know. So I mean, it's Pixar has been incredibly male centric. I don't think that's anything, you know, insidious about it. I just think it's a bunch of guys running the studio. I mean, they're gonna write what they thought was cool. They had spacemen and cowboy toys, and they had toy cars and
monsters.
They like monsters. Yeah, I mean, so it's very male centric. But it's the first one with a female protagonist. It's also the first one that's ever been directed by a woman.
Mm.
So it is going to have that softer touch. It is going to have that more princess oriented element, and that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with it having a lot of Disney in it and not as much. The traditional Pixar, because it's still a good movie. You know, it's a very traditional princess story. My biggest complaints about it is it's very derivative of some other big name and smaller name Disney movies. I mean, all the princess stuff, your typical princess who has a free spirit, who wants to run her own life and everything. She's kind of shackled by the burdens of being a princess. You got that in everything. Yeah, that's Snow White, or Snow White kind of, but it's really more Sleeping Beauty,
right?
That kind of thing. But even more the princess stuff, or Jasmine from
Mulan, right?
Mulan was from Mulan. Jasmine from that, and Beauty and the Beast. You know, even though she wasn't a princess in Beauty and the Beast, I mean, she was a revered woman, and you know, a girl that was kind of trying to be a free spirit. So they have that. All those themes are there. And if you compare it to, say, Sleeping Beauty, it has a lot of the thoughts of the prince in Sleeping Beauty, because he's like, I want to marry whoever I want to. I want to do whatever I want to do. I shouldn't be shackled by being a prince. Even though Sleeping Beauty is a princess, she just didn't know. Mm-hmm. I know a lot about Disney movies. So, but you see that in Cinderella. You see that in a lot of these. I mean, Prince Charming and Snow White, he just shows up singing. La la la. Kiss. They go off. But it does have that. And it also has these weird. It's so weird. I don't want to give too much away, but it's like a sequel to Brother Bear, which is a charming, wonderful film. I love Brother Bear. Very original.
It is very original.
But there's a lot of Brother Bear in this movie. Let's just say that.
You might be the only critic out there who compares this to Brother Bear.
I'm not. People aren't, because it's going to sound very spoilerish. But it has a lot to do. It's very similar to Brother Bear. When you see it, if you see it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, Kevin was totally right. Eric Childress, I saw saying something similar. I think it was Eric Childress, I think, said something similar to that. I don't necessarily take that as a negative, but it uses a lot of these story elements that we've seen before. Princess and the Frog, same thing. It's derivative of stuff from Princess and the Frog. So it kind of mines a lot of these Disney movies for ideas and then puts it in Scotland.
Nothing wrong with that.
But here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with being a little derivative. I mean, all Disney, good God, Sleeping Beauty's derivative of Cinderella, which is derivative of Snow White. Mm-hmm. They're all fairy tales. And this is, in essence, a fairy tale that was never written down. But it deals with the same thing. And it's very female-oriented. It's about a girl and her mom. I mean, you don't have a dead mother like every other Disney movie that's ever been made. You know, so it's about a girl, the relationship between a girl and her mom, and I think that's good. I think that's actually kind of daring to do in a movie like this, because you don't see that all that often. That's where it is original. But it's still fun. It doesn't run too long. It's a cute little story. It's something kids can like and adults can like. The animation is beautiful. I mean, to the point, I said this, I think it was when Ratatouille came out. I said, Pixar's gotten so good with their animation that you no longer even recognize it as animation.
Right.
Like, there's a scene in Ratatouille where Remy goes to the top of the restaurant. He looks out over Paris and you're like, oh, how beautiful Paris. And I'm like, whoa, that's not even real. that's not Paris. That's a computer image.
Right.
But Pixar has gotten so good at doing that. And that's the thing in here. They're going through the forest and there's a scene where she's climbing up this sort of this mountainside and there's a waterfall and then they're going through the forest and you got these trees and this river and everything. And you kind of have to just sit there. It was like when I saw Avatar, you have to sit there and think, there's not a pixel of this that is even real. This is all generated in a computer. And it's so photorealistic. It's amazing. Happy Feet 2, I recently watched. Both Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2. Mm-hmm. You kind of look at that movie and you forget that the backgrounds are computer generated.
Yeah.
So it looks gorgeous and it's in 3D and I like 3D and the kids like 3D and it's not gimmicky, but it's immersive and I think it adds depth to it. So I'm going to say Brave Rocks. I enjoyed it. It's not traditional Pixar, but there's nothing wrong with that.
How do you rate it within the kind of Pixar canon there?
Oh, see, it's, to me, there has not been a complete loser of a Pixar movie.
Right.
You know, I think the one I like the least is probably the original Cars. I actually like Cars 2 quite a lot.
Okay.
Simply because I said this once about Bolt, if you saw the movie Bolt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Bolt.
And I'm like, oh, Bolt was cute and it was charming and sweet and it was adorable. But I'm like, I'd like a movie that's that first 10 minutes of Bolt. Mm. I want that for the whole movie. And that's, to me, what Cars 2 was. So it's better. I liked it better than Cars, but it's somewhere right there in the middle. It's not as good as, you know, WALL-E or Up or The Incredibles, but right. or the Toy Story films. But it's not. I like it better than like Cars and Monsters Inc.
Okay.
So. Cool. But I mean, I know it's getting rough reviews.
Yeah, I think it's tough when you're Pixar and they have such high expectations,
yeah.
Especially after Up and, you know, Toy Story 3 did so incredibly well and they're, you know, fantastic movies. So
When I saw a lot of people, like when Cars 2 came, I had an argument with an unnamed critic out there when Cars 2 came out. He really trashed Cars 2. Of course, this isn't revealing at all who it is because everyone trashed Cars 2. But I said to him, I go, well, it's not that bad. I mean, it's not Toy Story, but it's not a bad movie. And I said, you can't just say because it's Pixar, suddenly we're going to raise the bar higher.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you sit there and say, well, it wasn't that good, but if it were produced by DreamWorks, it would have been okay.
Right.
You know, so.
Although DreamWorks has been doing really good lately.
DreamWorks has had some good stuff out there, yeah. But DreamWorks has a lot more turds in the punch bowl, I think.
That's an understatement.
Well, I mean, stuff like Shark Tale.
Yeah, not good, yeah.
And the Shrek movies, those have blown hot and cold. And
But How to Train Your Dragon is awesome.
See, I'm not a big fan of that one. Oh. I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm not a big fan of it. I like the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Oh, those are great.
Those are great movies. But yeah, I mean, like, oh, and there's, I mean, like in Megamind, I enjoyed Megamind, but hey, Megamind's not great.
No, it's kind of forgettable in a lot of ways, but yeah. It's fun when you're watching it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like when the movie Igor came out. If the people who did Igor came out with Cars 2, people would lose their shit. They'd be like, "Oh, that's awesome," because it was some Igor movie guy who did it,
and not Pixar. Yeah, you're right.
But Pixar's spreading itself thin. I mean, it was one thing to sit there and say, "Oh, if you come out with a movie every 3 years, you know, of course it's going to be a fantastic film." That's what I think. So we can move on. Let's talk about box office. This week was an embarrassing box office. I'd heard that this was the worst opening of any June ever, or of like the last 10 years or something like that.
I'm not surprised.
Because they had Rock of Ages and That's My Boy, neither of which managed to break $15 million.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was Madagascar 3 with $34 million, then Prometheus with just under 21, and then Rock of Ages at $14.4 million and That's My Boy at $13.4 million. These movies, I mean, That's My Boy was damn near beaten by Snow White and the Huntsman in its third week. It was like less than $200,000 away from getting beaten by Snow White.
Yeah, I think Adam Sandler might have run his course now at this point, when even the general public is not rushing out to see his movies.
Well, I think it was a gamble because it was an R-rated movie, and his last R-rated movie that he starred in was Funny People, and then before that was like Bulletproof.
Wow.
So he hasn't done R. He's kind of got that PG-13 family comedy stuff, even though all the movies he produces, you know, stuff like Bucky Larson and Grandma's Boy, those are all R.
Right.
But for an Adam Sandler movie, I think Jack and Jill kind of, it was just, I mean, it's not that he makes stupid movies, but it's almost like he's kind of given up.
Yeah. So. There doesn't seem a lot of effort behind what he's doing anymore.
No. And then Rock of Ages didn't do well. And I don't think anybody expected that to do well.
No, I think they might have, just with the Glee being so popular and, you know, musicals kind of having a resurgence, especially with like a younger crowd. So they might have expected it. And then, you know, even throwing Tom Cruise in there, which I have several female friends that actually did rush out to see Rock of Ages on Friday, you know, really? Got reserved seatings and really excited about it. But I think as far as the general audiences go, that's not something they're completely interested in. I think it was a gamble, but didn't pay off.
See, I think there are a couple people that if you put them in a movie in certain audiences, they'll do well. But even that, I mean, even if you take somebody out of their environment, they did the, you know, the Twilight movies, which make tons and tons of money. They did that movie Abduction back in the fall or spring, whenever the hell that was, with Taylor Lautner, and it Crash and Burn. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
About his movie. They did Water for Elephants. It did okay in the book club crowd, but it didn't get the Twilight crowd.
Yeah.
And I don't think Snow White and the Huntsman is getting that much play because of Kristen Stewart, even though she's the highest paid actress. Did you see that? She's Forbes' highest paid actress.
Well, an actress
who can't act is the highest paid actress.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not surprising in this day and age.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I think Rock of Ages was a huge misfire. And I don't know who they, weird. I was talking about this with Sean Dwyer last week, who was from Film Junk. He was on the show, and we basically said, I don't know who the audience is for this. Because if you were alive in the 80s during that craze, you didn't care about a lot of the people, and Tom Cruise is kind of a has-been to you. And you don't want to hear the Glee version of these musicals,
right.
of the music, so...
If I understand it correctly, it's based on a Broadway play as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
well,
that's a pretty narrow audience to be kind of looking for.
Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah, you can have a Broadway show that sells out every single night for 5 years, and that alone isn't enough audience to even do well on an opening weekend.
Yeah.
Because a Broadway show, yeah, you sell out, but it's in one theater. If it's on Broadway, it's in one theater. And even if it's an 800-seat theater and you do 1,000 shows, that's, you know, what, 800,000 people? That's less than 1 million people would have seen it. So, I mean, the numbers just don't wash. I mean, that's like sitting there saying, that's like the same thing when they go, oh, popular comic book. Like when they did Scott Pilgrim, a very, very different example. But they're like, oh, this comic book's very popular. I'm like, yeah, well, a independent, limited comic book was incredibly popular with like 100,000 people.
Right. Which is not enough to drive any kind of ticket sales.
Yeah. So we're going to spend $60 million on a movie about it.
Well, I guess we'll see how it goes again. I mean, they're doing Les Mis as a gigantic, you know, huge musical. And given it's Baz Luhrmann, who almost always is successful, maybe not.
Yeah.
He did, what, Australia as well, which wasn't huge. But
Australia did well. It's just it didn't do well enough to justify its budget.
Right. And Les Mis is a much bigger, you know, product, so it might do okay, but who knows?
I mean, well, but I think Les Mis is a different animal because people have been aware. Les Mis is based on a book, and they've done plays of Les Mis, they've done movies of Les Mis, not just the musical. Did you see the Les Mis, Rob, that they did with Liam Neeson and Jeffrey Rush?
I did not.
That's a very good movie, and I mean, so there's a pedigree there, but there's. You know, with Rock of Ages, there's not an original book to Rock of Ages. It's not like Victor Hugo wrote, you know, Hunchback of Notre Dame and Les Miserables and then Rock of Ages, and they all just made movies out of it.
If there's a movie adaptation, a book, a novelization of Rock of Ages, I want to read that.
I would totally read that. I'd read it the original French. Just because I can't imagine, because it'd be just like nonsense, 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 vomit.
Lyrics to Journey songs. Yeah. Oh, man.
That would be awesome. I can't imagine a universe where it would involve some sort of time travel in Star Trek, but it would still be awesome.
Well, there's been novelizations of like crazier movies, so I wouldn't be surprised if someone would come out with that. It also would bomb.
So what do you think is going to win this weekend?
Oh, Brave, easily.
Brave, I think Brave's going to win. I mean, I think Brave's good for probably a good 60, 70 million. I mean, it's going to be a big, I also think people are discounting, the reason I brought up the thing about it being a female-centric movie is female-centric movies tend to do well.
Yeah.
And they do well with the mothers in the crowd. They do well with the girls. And here's the thing. For as much as everyone says that Hollywood is very sexist and audiences always want to go for the main guys, you put a female character in a movie, guys don't care. Boys don't care if the main character is a girl. They just want a good movie.
Mm.
So, I mean, they're not going to go see Sex in the City for kids.
No.
Little Sex in the City.
The movie novelization. No, wait.
That's right, by Victor Hugo.
Herman Miller.
but I mean, boys will read books that have girls as the main characters. Girls are less inclined to read books that have boys as the main character.
Yeah.
And that's why Disney movies do well. Even princess movies do well. Tangled did well. And I don't think it was because they just beefed up Zachary Levi's character. Right. It's because, in general, boys tend to be more open to reading books about girls At least my experience. I mean, I could be completely talking out of my ass here, but
I think guys like looking at girls. It's really what I love looking at girls.
To quote another movie that comes out this week, Wanderlust. I love the titties. Everyone knows I love the titties.
I do too. I've talked with you about that before.
Was it you? Was it you who gave me the? Because you turned me on a certain Twitter feed.
That might have been me.
Was it did you read the one who recommended cleavage tweet to me?
I think I was.
Yes, cleavage tweet.
Cleavage tweet.
Cleavage tweet is great. Well, because I was I don't follow very many porn stars.
No.
Not in Twitter. In real life, all the time, I just follow them around in a trench coat with tissues and Vaseline, you know. But no, but I don't. I drank too much one night, just once, and
which once
happened sometime with a year that begins with a two,
the day that ends with a Y.
Yes, exactly. But I was, and I wake up the next morning, and I find all these porn stars on my Twitter feed, and I'm like, oh, that's right. I just started following these porn stars. Porn stars are the worst on Twitter. How many do you follow?
I used to follow several, and I've since unfollowed them because it's either too sad.
It is, yeah. Some of them are pathetic.
They're really sad, or they weren't posting enough pictures for me to even care.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what you're there for.
Yeah. I don't care if you're going out to eat. I don't care if regular people are going out to eat. But if I'm following a porn star, that's really not what I want to read.
They'd be like, oh, look at my little friend. And it's your cat. And you're like, who the hell wants a picture of that?
I think
that is not – these are not the pussies we're looking for.
Yeah. Porn stars post more pictures of their pets than film critics.
No, that's not true.
No, that's true.
I was about to say, if you really want to see some pussy on Twitter – follow some film critics because it's just nonstop pussy.
Yep. Cats. All the time.
All the time. No, but I follow Riley Steele.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the best. She posts pictures of her food and her cats, but usually she knows her audience. She's like, oh, you can get some boobs. And she's got a fantastic ass, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if it's been augmented or not because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks fantastic. But here's the thing. I for some reason, I thought this once, and it's so hard to get out of my head now, is every time I see a picture, and she's just bending over, showing her ass, and then the caption in my mind reads, this is where farts come from. And I'm like, I don't know why I think that every single time.
Because you have an amazing sense of humor.
Because I'm awesome. That's why. But I'm like, what do I do when that happens? I mean, I'm just like, oh, I can't think of that now.
Oh,
but I get past it. I push past through.
You should be at Horror Movie Night every Wednesday with us.
Dude, if I ever come down to Austin, I'm totally going to be there on a Wednesday.
You got to be there because every time there's a butt, there's fart sounds.
There's where farts come from.
That's right.
This is where I make my poop.
Boy.
But I only follow three porn stars, and it's Riley Steele,
mm-hmm.
and Tabitha Stevens, and she's older. She's in her 40s, but...
Yeah.
I once insulted her on Twitter and she yelled at me and I'm like, well, you know, kudos for her for standing up for herself.
Exactly.
And so and she posts pictures of herself all the time and she's very sculpted, not mm-hmm. not in a Nautilus sort of way, in a kind of Beverly Hills 90210, you know,
yeah.
she's isn't she married to a plastic surgeon or something like that? Or she knows some,
I'm not sure. She actually had a radio show or still does, I think. So I used to listen to her on there.
Yeah. And I mean, she she's actually really cool. She's very down to earth and she's, and what I think's really neat is when she gets on there and she rants about other porn, but she's really cool about it. She doesn't name check anybody when she rants about them. Mm-hmm. She's just like, girls in the biz today, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So I like, so I do her. And then the other one, I do her. I don't do her.
No, you don't.
the other one I follow is Courtney Combs.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't think that's her. I don't think she was baptized that, because it's spelled like C-U-M-M-Z.
Pretty sure that's not her Christian name.
I'm pretty sure it's not. I think her name is really Courtney Ejaculates.
with three Z's.
But it's just the Twitter wasn't long enough. So She didn't want to be Courtney and Jacka or something like that. But she's great. She just posts pictures all over all the time, and she's fantastic. I always thought that she kind of, when she was younger, she kind of looked like Anna Faris. Okay. So I always kind of was into her, and they all post nudie pictures. But I like followed other people, and they'd be like, they complain about things, or they'd be like, there's one porn star who got cancer, and I'm like, I mean, I feel terrible for you, but I don't want to read about a porn star who got cancer.
No, that is a so complete depressing. Downer.
it's just like limp, But I there was this one time I was following and it was Riley Steele, and she like tweets out, she's like, oh my god, I got like the absolute worst information, worst news ever, and then nothing. For like and I'm like, what is the worst news ever for a porno star? She totally has AIDS.
Yeah. That's pretty much the worst news ever for a porn star. I can't imagine anything worse.
And then she was back on like 2 days later, but she's like in her early 20s. So she's dramatic and, you know.
You're saying porn stars are dramatic. I'm shocked.
Well, not in the show. I mean, not. What's really funny about porn stars, I'm sharing a little too much here, but I've had too much ass wine today. I got this bottle of red wine, and it's called like the Spanish Demon or something like that. It's ass. It's got a screw cap as the top.
Drinking the demon.
I feel like Steve Martin needs to show up in shorts and be the waiter for me. So I'm sharing too much, but when it comes to I totally forgot what I was going to say.
To porn Riley stars, Steele. Riley Steele.
It's about porn stars and Riley Steele. It's probably good that I forgot.
I'm sure it's going to be depressing anyway.
This is the hand of God coming down and saying, "Forget this, Kevin." Beep. I have no self-respect.
Yeah, I don't either. It's okay.
Anyways, do you think Thinking a Friend at the End of the World is going to do better than Madagascar or Prometheus?
It's going to do better than Riley Steele.
I don't know, man.
I think Steve Carell will have a bit of a draw. So I haven't seen it advertised too heavily, which I think might hurt it. But I would expect, you know, somewhere in the 12 to 15 million box office. So probably better than Madagascar.
Well, Madagascar, I think it's only an opening in 1,400 theaters. So. Abraham Lincoln, though, what do you think is going to happen? I saw on movietickets.com, they referred to it as Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And I'm like, that's a little casual.
He was a president.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Let's have some respect. Well, you know what it's like when people, like just to call Bill Clinton, that's because that's what he went by. Everybody knew him as Bill Clinton. But to call Robert De Niro Bobby De Niro, I hate when people do that when they're talking to him, like, oh, I like Bobby De Niro's films.
You're not friends with him.
You don't know him. I like him when he's in Marty Scorsese's movies. What the fuck are you talking about?
You're not pals with these guys. Knock
I just
it
want
off.
To throw my I just want to throw my Spanish demon ass wine in their face and light them on fire.
Oh man. Like they're vampires being killed by Abe.
You know what I think we should do? I think we should take it up among themselves, and we can blame Twilight for this. And there's a reason for this. Just if there's somebody you don't like, set them on fire. That's my go-to position. And then if somebody says, why? I go, there. I thought they were a vampire. And that should get you off. Because even if the law doesn't recognize that as a valid excuse, you're definitely in for an insanity play. But the whole thing, they could say, well, it's in daylight. And you'd be like, dude, Twilight? Huh?
Well, now
that's,
you should go
that's
for
exactly what you should say in court.
You should go for zombies now. It's the hip thing.
That's right. Zombies. I thought he was dead already. You can't kill twice. It's like refried beans. Have you ever seen, do you know what that's from?
No.
The reference of comparing zombies to the undead to refried beans?
Unfortunately, no.
That doesn't sound familiar at all? Oh, you call yourself a horror fan. That's Tales from the Hood.
Oh.
Have you seen Tales from the Hood?
Yeah, it's been a while on that one. I think that one deserves a rewatch, though.
Give a call. Horror movie night. Tales from the Hood. It's a classic.
And you're using the air quotes, right, for classic?
Sure. I may have, you know, I mean, I do recommend you have at least a couple bottles of Spanish demon ass wine on hand.
I'm never drinking anything that says demon on it, I don't think.
It's like, do you ever watch a show, The League? You watch a million hours of TV. Do you ever watch The League?
I've seen several episodes of The League, but I have not watched it consistently. It's one of those ones on my catch-up list.
Oh, dude, do you like Sunny? Do you like It's Always Sunny?
Oh, I love it, yeah.
Oh, dude, you got to watch The League. The League is amazing. I fucking hate sports, but I love The League.
That's actually what kept me away. I was like, I'm not a huge sports fan at all. In fact, I hate sports. So
they occasionally swerve into it, but no, it's like you don't have to like bars to like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That just happens to be where they are.
Right. That makes
but
sense.
But no, the League, because like the Taco, the one guy, he makes his own three penis wine. And it's called three penis wine because he uses three penises. It's like a goat penis.
God.
It's like penises from three different animals, and he makes three penis wine.
I'd drink it.
I totally would.
I would. What can I say?
I would taste it.
No, I would drink it.
I'd probably drink it.
I'm not one to let the booze go to waste.
You're like, well, three penises. If it was four penises, I'd draw the line.
I think I'm a five penis line.
Five penises, that's my limit. I will not go over five penises a night.
That's right.
Oh my God, we went off the rails, aren't we? Let's get back on track. What are we talking about? Brave? How many penises were in Brave? None, because it's about ladies.
We're actually Abe Lincoln.
And his penis.
Box office, Abe Lincoln.
I hear that Abe Lincoln said, he quoted Cartman when he was shot. He goes, John Wilkes Booth, you don't shoot a guy in the dick. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he said. At least that's what Mary Todd Lincoln said. Was she even with him?
I think she was.
Was she? Because they didn't like each other. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
They did not like each other. That's why I think... I'd read this may be the ass wine talking, but I'd heard that he got really into his job because he just wanted to avoid her.
Mm.
So, did you see her? She kind of looks like a troll.
A vampire troll?
But she probably gave great blowjobs because, you know, isn't that the rumor that like really ugly girls?
That's what they say.
Great blowjobs. I keep trying to convince my wife. I said, this is something I want to investigate.
How's that going?
So I said, can you get a couple of your friends, some good looking girls, and just, I'll test it out. No, it's for science. Seriously. No, I'm not going to enjoy it at all.
For science. You're getting a government grant for it.
Can we write a grant for that? Do we have the guy with the money suit that looks like the Riddler on TV? Come on, get grants for anything.
Can I get a grant for blowjobs?
He's like, yes. You just have to run for Congress. That's what it is. You know what, though? This is what's so great about America. I'm getting philosophical now. And you know what's funny? I'm going to use an example that's not even American. But I've always said you should do what you love doing. If you do what you're good at and do what you love doing, I am good at watching movies and telling people what I think. And I'm making a living doing that. I'm not even a great living doing it, but I'm actually making it my career and my time. So don't get stuck doing something you hate. And I was watching an episode of Real Sex. Why don't you ever watch Real Sex?
Yes, I have. I've seen them all.
You're like all of them.
All of them. Never missed an episode. No, seriously, haven't.
Well, first of all, Real Sex is one of those amazing things that I would love to see the 12-year-old kid stumbling onto that, because it's like the most just completely inconsistent wanking material ever.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, because you'd be like, oh yeah, this is hot, and then you're just like, then they're like, we're gonna do granny's butt fucking. You're like, no. And then he recognizes somebody, he's like, grandma.
No.
But there was some And it was like in Denmark or wherever, somewhere in Europe. And like, it was like Europe or Netherlands. It was in that area. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, it wasn't Spanish or something. So it was like up in that Denmark, Netherlands, or Norway. I don't know.
Right.
And they were, it was some magazine, and they were profiling this magazine. It was a pornographic magazine. And this was in the 90s, early 90s, mid 90s. So magazines were much more common then, I guess.
Less internet,
People weren't yanking it to the internet. I don't know what this guy does now, but his job, literally along the production line, they had the photographers and the models, blah, blah, blah. And they had a guy at the end who would get sent the pictorials, and it was his job to masturbate to the pictorials. And that, and if he didn't find them good enough, they did not get published.
So basically the best job ever.
It's just the best ever. I mean, so the, can you imagine thinking, oh my God, I got to go to work and jack off 7 or 8 times. I mean, you have to imagine I hope he used an ointment of some sort.
Lots and lots of lube.
Yeah, because the chafing has to be bad. But I mean, and he said he'd like have to do it like 5 to 7 times a day, which I'm like, I'm there.
Yeah. Sign me up.
It's like, wait a minute. You have to take a, oh, I'm so tired. I had such a furious day of masturbating. I know, honey. I just want to watch TV, please. But I'm like, here's a guy who found out something he's really good at, and he's doing it for a living.
I'm just trying to imagine what his job interview was like.
He'd be just like, well, let's see. Because the thing is, here's the thing. You can't be too good at that. You can't sit there. They can't sit there and be like, here's the world's greatest dad coffee mug. Masturbate to that. And if the guy can do that, at that point, you have to be like, well, you're not what we want, because
you have to be a little more discriminating.
Yeah, we don't want to be publishing the pornographic equivalent of world's greatest dad. So, stay in school, kids. That's the message I have to say.
Stay in school and masturbate a lot. You will be a vampire hunter. I don't know.
That is awesome. I will. I envy that guy. I don't know where he is now. He's probably dead. Who knows? You don't get in that business. You don't get in the masturbation business and not, you know, make a few enemies.
Do you? Is there a masturbation mob?
You see, he wanks it with the fishes.
I'm pretty sure that guy's easily replaceable. I hate to say it.
Yeah, I'm sure. We want to post the thing on monster.com. Everybody like it just floods their inbox.
My mail server crashed.
That's great.
I'm pretty sure they just asked the janitor, can you do this? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it just turns around, everyone's like waiting in line. And people are like, well, I masturbate for free. I mean, I know that's the thing. Don't you, after you see something like that, you feel so stupid. Have you ever done the thing where like, you know, as a writer, you're a writer. If you've done a writer and you're like working and you're like writing for free and then you find out somebody else is getting paid for it, and you're like, fuck that shit. Could you imagine being in that office and be like, wait a minute, I do that in the restroom every lunch. And I do it for free.
That guy's getting paid?
What the hell?
Man, talk about the short end of the stick.
Oh, heavens.
Oh, man.
I wonder what medical plan he has. All right. We should move on. Brave. Anyways, no.
Poor Brave.
I don't think Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is going to do well.
No, so. Not at all. It's definitely going to bomb.
It's gonna make it's good. It's it. It'll make more than Rock of Ages, I think.
Such aspirations.
Let's hope so. If it doesn't, I'm gonna quit my job and get a job masturbating in a pornographic magazine in Norway. Anyways,
I wanted to make some money because I want Timur Berkiv, whatever his name is, to keep making movies. So
Berkmambetov.
Wow, that may have been that was good.
I'm reading it. That was not from memory, trust me.
So, yeah. I mean, if anything, I'm always a fan of genre movies. So, you know, if it makes somewhat of, you know, at least makes its money back, I think it'll be good.
As long as it's fun.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This kind of movie, it has to be fun. You can't take it too serious.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else you want to get off your chest? This is obviously it's a free for all at this
confession
point,
so. Time with Kevin.
Confession anything? Any
any skeletons in the closet? No.
Anything you want to say to Riley Steele on our Twitter feed?
No. I think we're okay for now.
Let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. This is not in honor of Brave, not in honor of Abraham Lincoln, and not in honor of masturbating fantasies. This is in honor of seeking a friend for the end of the world. And this is 5 great end of the world movies, of which Melancholy is not on the list. So there, you can forget about that right now. Not that I didn't like Melancholy was okay. Did you like Melancholia?
It was a movie. I enjoyed it. Was pretty to watch. It's
titties.
It's overly ambitious to me, so
titties.
Yeah, it had titties. And you know, seeing Kirsten Dunst's breasts gives it extra bonus points, but still doesn't make it something that I
did. You say bonus points? Bonus points? Is that what you said?
Yeah,
or is that something else?
Bonus points. Yes, but not something that I was, you know, overly enthusiastic about.
Yeah, I was kind of. It was. It's not my kind of movie.
Right.
Except for that brief titty moment, then I was like, "I'm here. All right, I'm bored."
Back to slow motion moons and yeah. All right, I got it.
Yeah, the 5 great. These are 5 great. These aren't the greatest because we're way too lazy to do that. But they're 5 great end of the world movies. The first one is, and this was yours adding to the list. Mm-hmm. It was Children of Men.
Absolutely.
So remind people why this is an end of the world movie. It's a little more subtle, but
it's an end of the world movie because since nobody is reproducing, mm-hmm. there's not going to be any more people once everyone's dies off. So it really is an apocalypse.
It's just a very slow moving one.
Yeah, extremely slow moving. But you know, the entire world is pretty much in chaos during that film. It sets us up for the coming end of the world. So it's an incredible film. I don't think there was anybody out there who really, you know, thought this movie when it came out that was not impressed by what happened in it. And I think if you're gonna, you know, rate them rate the end of the world movies, this definitely is one that has to have, you know, some kind of respect and props.
Yeah, and I think it's one that people forget, so it's good that you put that on the list.
Thanks.
The next one on the list is one from one of my favorite directors, one of my favorite crap directors, and that would be 2012, which is directed, of course, by the man, the legend, Roland Emmerich. I recently rewatched this because it is 2012. Mm-hmm. And I actually watched it on the 20th of June, which is the summer solstice, and the world's supposed to end on the winter solstice. It's, of course, the story about the Mayans were predicting the end of the world, and then it's how it actually happens. It was made in 2009. The most ridiculous part of the movie was the black president, because that shit's never going to happen.
Of course not.
No, of course. But it's a dumb movie. I mean, the characters are terrible, and it runs way too long. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
It takes a long time to destroy the world.
Yeah. And there's like literally 3 scenes of a plane just barely taking off the runway. They kind of repeat themselves in the movie. They're like, in case you're getting popcorn, here's another one. The plane gets bigger each time, I think. But I'll tell you, boy, when the destruction happens, it's fucking awesome. It is you get to see the entire city of Pasadena fall into the ground. And if only Project X was taking place during that moment, would have made it better. So we'll see if it happens on the 24th. That's my wedding anniversary. That's my 15th wedding anniversary, actually.
Super. Something to look forward to. I don't know.
Yeah. And isn't that when Snooki's babies do?
That is also when Snooki's babies do. And why I know that is a horrible,
shame
terrible
on you.
Thing. I have no idea. Popular culture. I know too much.
Yeah.
The next one on the list is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I actually put this on. We're doing a series on Film School Rejects called Apocalypse Soon, and every Friday we list a movie that you should see before the end of the world. Sometimes it's relevant to the end of the world. Sometimes it's just a great movie that you should see. Make a point to see before the end of the world. I put in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because it, of course, involves the literal end of the world where the Vogons come in and blow up the Earth to make way for a interstellar freeway. I took a lot of shit for this, actually, because fans of the book are not fans of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't. Did you see that? Did you see and did you like The Hitchhiker's Guide? And have you read the book?
I've read the book, but I read it when I was young, so I wasn't, you know, completely tied to it. But I really enjoy the movie. I think it's hilarious. So
I showed it to my kids, and they freaking loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's slightly different, and it's not as British as the book is.
Right.
So it's a little more accessible to Americans. And it's not that I don't have a problem with British humor, but I like American humor too, and I think that there's plenty of humor in there to find and be silly. It's a silly thing. It's all about being silly.
Yeah.
And I think that at the very heart of it, the movie achieves the silliness, and it stars the Hobbit. So, you know, what are you gonna say?
It's funny. The funny thing that I remember that what actually connects me to Hitchhikers is playing the Infocom game. Do you remember those text based games?
No.
So, like the guys who did Zork. Do you remember Zork?
I'm not much of a gamer.
Oh, okay. So, like back in the day, like before, you know, they had graphics, they always had these text based games where it's like an adventure and you type, like, go north, you know, look, and they would describe, you know.
You're talking about stuff like from the early 80s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember dabbling when I was like in fifth grade or whatever.
Right. So, they made a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game, and I've played through it several times. And so, that's what I think of is when I think of the game is, or when I think of the movie is, I think of that game and it had lots of the stuff that was in the game. So that's why I actually liked it.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, check it out. I mean, it's cute. It's funny. Then the Thanks for All the Fish song is awesome.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. The next one is one that we both agreed on. We both put on the list, and that would be, I put the whole series, but you said a particular movie in this.
Yeah, I put The Road Warrior, which I think is probably, for me, it's probably the greatest post-apocalyptic movie out there.
Yeah, it's one that's grown on me, and I've gotten a lot more respect for it over the years, because it is so just balls to the wall.
Yeah.
And I think it's even better now, when you've seen movies today and it's all CGI stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they blow up a car, they blow up a freaking car.
Yeah. The final sequences of that movie with the car chases, with people flying out of cars and cars flipping and people jumping from car to car. And it's just an incredible piece of action that even by today's, you show someone who's never seen it, you know, and they've seen action movies today, and you watch that, they're still going to be blown away.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those movies that, and it is kind of timeless, because since it does take place in this post-apocalyptic future, this unnameable time, it's not bound by style. Well, oddly enough, the style in the sequel, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, is more essentially 80s than The Road Warrior is.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see Bellflower?
Oh, yeah. Sure did.
Did you like Bellflower? I hated Bellflower.
Really? Oh, like I love Bellflower. I've seen it many times.
Was it just because they made a fire extinguisher, or a flamethrower, and made their own Medusa car?
No, actually, I'm actually a fan of the characters in the movie. Like, I actually related to them in some ways, and I thought, like, the story itself was, like, highly entertaining, and, like,
you're one of those guys.
Yeah. I'm actually a huge fan of Bellflower.
Okay.
So,
that's cool. I mean, I you know what? I'll say this. Any independent movie that's a labor of love, even if I freaking hate it, I respect the fact that they make it, and I respect it even more if it gets that modicum or greater success.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing I love about Bellflower is its success. And it put these guys on the map. And that's awesome. I hated the movie, but I can respect the hell out of them for it.
Yeah. And so. and I think it was even a bonus for me that they had the flamethrower and the whole love of the Road Warrior. So I related to them even on that level. So
do you know what I took issue with? They kept calling it Mad Max.
That's
and
true.
I'm like, no, that's not Mad Max. It's the Road Warrior or it's Mad Max 2. But they're in like Southern California and it's called the Road Warrior in America.
Right.
And in Australia, it was Mad Max 2.
Well, maybe when they taped it off of TV, they taped the Australian version and it was called Mad Max 2 and they're just being lazy.
You're just making excuses for them.
Yeah, I am. It's all right.
The last one on the list is yours as well. So what's that one?
I picked a movie that really is an end of the world movie that I think a lot of people hate, but I think it is a great piece of B movie action, and it's Reign of Fire. It's a movie where a young boy discovers dragons. And they take over the world and just destroy it. So the only thing that's left is people trying to survive in a world where dragons are now the number one predator. It has Matthew McConaughey. It has Batman in it.
It's Batman in it. Not right. Christian Bale. It just has Batman. Yeah, he shows up in the bed.
Yeah.
He's like, I see these dragons.
I'm going to take these
and
dragons
I
want
to take care of them.
That's right. I mean, Matthew McConaughey, Christian Bale... The movie's ridiculous. I'm not going to argue that it's not, but it's a load of fun. I think.
I thought the reason for the dragons and what they were, I thought was kind of cool.
Right.
I thought that was neat. I thought that was neat that they did something unique like that.
Well, I think the idea of absurd as it is that dragons come back, if they did, it would pretty much destroy the world.
It would fuck us up. Yeah, if somebody released real dragons in the world. Screw this Harry Potter garbage where they're like, oh, there's tons of species of dragons. It's just nobody knows about them except the wizards. Right. Fuck that.
Yeah.
They'd be like burning down London.
Which they do, so.
Yes. Yeah, I can respect that. We've got a couple honorable mentions. I put Wall-E on as my honorable mention because even though it's actually a rejuvenation of the world, it's the world coming back, but it is an end of the world movie, and Wall-E is just it's just really much a tie between The Incredibles and Wall-E is my favorite Pixar movies, so I had to put that on there. And you had an honorable mention because it's not really a movie.
Mine was a TV movie. But I really think it's relevant, and it was The Day After, which is basically the story of people dealing with nuclear war and having the bombs drop. And I think people now who haven't seen it, because it was a huge thing when we were young, when it showed on TV.
You talked about it in school. You went home, you watched it. Yeah. You shit yourself when the people burned, when the bombs dropped.
Oh.
And they like, when they got zapped, they literally looked like they were shot by Daleks.
It did look like they were shot by Daleks.
Because they just go, psst.
But it was the most horrifying thing you'd ever seen on television. I mean, it was.
This is what was so awful about The Day After is it was made as a TV movie. But see, since it was so topical in school, and I'm sure it was the same with where were you? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in El Paso, Texas. So
okay, so in El Paso, Texas, far as hell from Columbus, Ohio. Tell me if this is not what happened, because you were probably in third, fourth grade or whatever. Because
mm-hmm.
I was in sixth. And they were like, oh, yeah, the social studies teacher had to go watch it. So we watched it. They encouraged us to watch it with our family. And just the kids just shit themselves. And they were terrified. The kids had no control over this. It was just a nonstop terror fest of what could really happen. If you're going to wake up the next morning and the bombs are going to drop and it's going to melt your face off and there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. Isn't that what they did? They made you watch it at school? They suggested you watch it at school?
They suggested we watch it at home. And everyone did. And that's all we could talk about because we were terrified. It was the middle of the Cold War, and you're like, this could happen.
And it was right around the time where Reagan made that joke on the, he's like, oh, we're going to start the bombing in 5 minutes. And people just like lost their shit all over the country on this stuff. Nowadays, people think, oh, Patriot Act and terrorism. You think the living in fear is like it is now? Go back to the 80s. Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, I remember I'd wake up, I'd be crying myself to sleep as a kid. Because when you're in sixth grade, what the hell kind of control do you have on that? Hell, if you're an adult, what kind of control do you have on that? If the Ruskies were going to bomb us, they're going to bomb us.
And they were going to.
Oh, they so were.
We were terrified.
It was the most horrifying thing. It fucked us up as kids.
But on the other hand, I guess, you know, there was nothing else that was more terrifying than that. So
yeah,
kind of prepared you.
Yeah, people are like, oh, yeah, I love Paranormal Activity because it feels so real. I'm like, the day fucking after, man.
We are all going to die from Russian nukes. It's screw nothing, a bunch of ghosts.
So, yeah, the hell with the ghosts. They just attack this one family. Sucks to be you, but I'm okay. But no, they're just going to wipe us out. So, yeah, day after was quite a thing. And then the day after, then there was a lot of people left over. You're like, what the hell kind of, the Russians can't do anything right.
Can't even build a bomb right. Can't kill us all.
It killed these cows in the field and these, like, this guy over there, but there are a lot of people left over. Anywho. With that, I think we should probably go to a break.
Okay.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in our final segment. And, you know, if you're listening on the radio, this is one of those times where we just advise you not to go back and listen to the middle segment. Because we kind of went off the rails and into the gutter. And then went down in the sewer. So we did not at all stay respectful in the middle segment. So you can go back and listen to the middle segment. Listen to what he had to say about Brave. Because we had some more things cool to say about Brave. But then we had a lot of other things to say that nobody should listen to. For those of you who are listening on the internet, tough beans, you already listened. Anyways, we did have an interesting discussion. We talked about box office. We talked about Brave. We talked about, you know, various people we follow on Twitter. And we talked about following your dreams and doing what's good that you're good at. You'll find out how that all relates if you go back and listen. But what do we have coming up now here, Noah?
And coming up now, we got the world-famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. You want to do your first one? You've got one. You can take some of mine, too. I just always make sure I have the ones on the list that I
want to. One is a movie that's coming out this week I kind of wanted to give a little bit of a shout-out to because I saw it at South by Southwest, and I thought it's a really kind of charming film. It's called A Bag of Hammers. One of its kind of more named stars is Jason Ritter. And it's a story of like these two slackers who are kind of just making their way through lives. They're best friends. They're kind of, you know, career criminals. Yeah. And the world is kind of turned upside down when they meet a young kid who they end up having to take care of. And it kind of changes their lives and makes them, you know, kind of better people. And it sounds kind of generic, and in a lot of ways it is. But I think the movie itself delivers, you know, a really kind of charming story. Jason Ritter himself is like a pretty charismatic character. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a movie that's worth seeing. I think I didn't even know it was coming out on DVD release until I just, when I was browsing through the releases this week. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to see that it got picked up because you never know when you're at South by Southwest what's going to get a release or not. And
it's got to be tough covering festivals and not knowing if anything's going to click.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's hundreds of movies at a film festival, and you never know what's going to be good and what's not, and what's going to click with the audiences. And Bag of Hammers actually did get a lot of good buzz when I was there. There's a few people who thought it was the best thing they saw. I didn't think so, but I do think it's a movie worth seeing. So I'd like to recommend people go out and check out A Bag of Hammers.
Awesome, cool. That's one to check out. Couple of them that I've got, two of them are TV shows. One is Wilford season one and the other is Louie season two. I tend to like Wilford more just because it's even weirder than most people are used to. It's about a guy who he kind of loses his job and just kind of goes into slacker mode and then starts to maybe hallucinate, maybe just see his neighbor's dog as a guy in a dog suit.
Mm-hmm.
and everybody else.
He attempts to kill himself, I think, in the first episode.
Yeah, he tries to kill himself at first, and so we don't know. We don't know exactly what the deal is. It's starting up, the next season starting up pretty soon this summer, but it is a summer season. But yeah, Wilford, it's funny, it's weird, it's based on a British show,
Australian.
Yeah. Oh, is it Australian? I'm sorry. My apologies. Yeah. Every accents, whatever.
They're not American.
They're not Americans. They don't speak American. They speak Australian. The other one is Louis, of course, Louis season two, which I like Louis C.K. stuff. He gets a little dark and weird at times, and I know some people love that. That's not when I think he's at his best, but the Louis show is really funny and just strange. Not as strange as Wilford, though. There's also Newsies on Blu-ray. And I have to shout that out. Well, yeah, it's a Broadway show. That was a movie first. So if you like the Broadway show, you can check that out. And it's also, it's got Batman in it as well.
Batman as a kid.
Batman as a kid fighting in the newspaper strike.
I'm here to deliver news.
Do you want some papers? it's also one of my wife's favorite movies, so I have to give that a shout out. Big Miracle, which is about the gray whales trapped in the ice in Alaska. Cute enough family film. It's not great, but it's cute enough. Don't go read what it's really about, because they kind of trample on the true nature of the story in some ways. And there's also Wanderlust, which is Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston as people who kind of leave their life in the city and join a commune. I did not like this in the theater at all. It's much better on video. It has some interesting special features, like they cut in all the alternate takes to make a bizarro cut of the film, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's kind of neat to see. Mm-hmm. Paul Rudd's hilarious in it. Jennifer Aniston's Jennifer Aniston. But, and then Seeking Justice is a direct-to-DVD Pay My Bills movie from Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he doesn't go full Cage in this movie. He maybe makes it to like a quarter or a third Cage in this. But it's still actually not a bad film. It's not great. I mean, it's not, if it was a theatrical release, it'd be terrible. But it's just, it's okay for sort of that thriller. There's some justice being sought.
They get justice.
the stinger of the week is Project X, which is, and I said this when I reviewed it, not to stoop to hyperbole, but this is quite possibly the worst movie ever made. And quite possibly the worst movie that will ever be made from now until the end of the world. So take that with a grain of salt. It's a terrible movie. It's all so bad. Anyways, review wrap up. Brave, I said, rocks. Seeking a Friend to the End of the World kind of rocks. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us, but both of us are looking forward to it. Magic Night next week, we're talking Magic Mike, People Like Us, Ted, and Tyler Perry's Medea's Witness Protection. I hope you're excited for that. Anyways, go to fatguysinthemovies.com. Go to me, twitter.com/KevinCarr. And Noah, tell us where to find you.
You can find my reviews up at filmthreat.com or at horrorsnotdead.com. That's, you know, horrors, like horror movies. Or you can find me on Twitter at noahfx.com, N-O-A-H-P-H-E-X.
Awesome. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.